Hello and welcome to the HBO Boys podcast. Today we're talking about Fallout Season 2, Episode 7, entitled The Handoff. Adam, we're in the penultimate episode, baby.
I can't believe it already. We just talked about this before we started recording. It is only 8 episodes, and that is a bummer.
That's not enough. That's not a high enough number of episodes.
It's not enough. But the hope here is that we're getting season three sooner. Just repeat that over and over.
Yeah, there's no place like home. I wonder if Lucy would get caught in a tornado or she would be the one crushed by a house.
let's hope it's not the latter.
Either way, it would be wicked, dude.
Hey, great.
It could stop. Kill me. No. Yeah, penultimato. I mean, we're raring up for a finale that, as we record this, is probably already out. Because, again, they changed the release structure. So, you know, so it goes.
Yeah, I don't like that they did this. I'm not quite sure why they did this. Well, they said that it's to advance the story and keep hype, but they would have had the same hype if they released it 7 hours later like they normally do.
Yeah, it's for reasons that they're not telling us, and they're lying. So, who cares, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's saying it's premiering this evening, and this evening being February 3rd, 2026, 6 hours earlier than originally expected. So, whatever they needed to do in that 6 hours, I hope it was worth it.
probably not. Anyway, let's talk about the handoff, baby. So we enter into this episode to see the cold open that was actually pretty cold for real, because we open with a pre-war flashback to Steph's life. This is 200 years earlier. Her and her mother are in a Canadian internment camp that's controlled by the invading Americans. And while they're trying to escape, her mother is fatally wounded and tells Steph, don't think of them as human beings. Think of them as Americans. As Steph, crosses the border into America, into what I assume was in the past the American dream, but now is just a larger prison that is less Canadian, you hoser.
Yeah, this gave Civil War Jesse Plemons energy. Like, what kind of American are you? Well, I'm Canadian, so we'll start there.
Bang, bang, bang. Shot immediately. All of us should be wearing red-tinted sunglasses.
Yeah, I mean, I really loved the start of this episode. It when it first started going, I didn't know if the show had started yet because it was so drastically different than what we've seen so far. So I loved this. I think it's really cool we're getting a backstory to her, because she just kind of was there, and we do know that she was from, you know, Vault Tech to some degree. I think that's pretty much assumed, but I really did like seeing Steph's pre-war life.
Right. A story that I have previously complained about made better almost instantly with some backstory that leads us directly back into the present, where in Vault 32, Steph's past starts to sort of catch up to her, where Overseer Betty gives Steph a box that belonged to Hank, hinting at connections between the vault dwellers and the underground machinations of the near future. All the while, Chet, Steph's fiance, forcibly so, discovers Woody's broken glasses in the garbage disposal, which is sus as heck.
That's pretty sus. And it also, when he put them back in the, or he broke them and then put them back in, I was like, well, no, why are you doing that? That's your, no, please don't.
It's because he's trying to hide it, you know?
Yeah.
And also because to have a dramatic wedding, I guess.
Yeah, a dramatic wedding where it was very evident that he didn't have proof. And the only thing that people were upset about was when they found out she was Canadian.
Right. Yeah, that was the straw that broke that hoser Canadian camel's back.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I believe this is a factoid of the actual game timeline, is that the Canadians and the Americans were, I wouldn't say at war, but they definitely didn't like each other.
Well, but, yeah, the Americans invaded them.
It's not chill. We're not chill.
And we never have been, but I will say, if that's not war, it is at least war adjacent.
No, yeah, for sure.
That kind of wraps up the Steph storyline. She runs away, hides away, and is now, you know, real sad about her life falling apart. But she is a survivor, and the way that she gets out of problems is by enacting violence on others. So we'll see how it goes from here on out.
Yeah, she was pretty ruthless, and like just slitting people's throats for baked beans, stabbing the border patrol man's heart, I think you know. But I do love that that all these storylines are starting to converge. You know, we're seeing Steph later on the episode interacting with Cooper Howard, and it's just, I love that we're finally getting some holistic resolution here.
Yeah, was it weird to you that the Canadian border crossing was just one dude?
Yeah, a little bit, but then again, that's how it really is, I think, right? In the woods of Canada and into the United States, it is just kind of like a guard post, and you go through and show your passport and you're good to go. I mean, maybe that's different now, but yeah, it is weird that it was only one dude, especially if there was, you know, political unrest, we'll say, in this timeline. So strange, but a small detail, I guess.
Yeah. And then elsewhere, Lucy finally confronts her father, Hank, about how the automated man is a crime against humanity. And they argue back and forth, but eventually Lucy tricks him and handcuffs him to an oven, which then allows her to start heading down to the mainframe, where she hopes to shut this situation down, because the mainframe is for sure a computer and nothing weird
behind that door at all. Nothing weird.
There was, though. It was a little weird. In fact, we'll get there right now. She gets down there and she goes through secret corridors, and then she uses Hank's key and reaches the heart of the control system. And instead of circuitry and wires and computers, we see a shocking revelation that the core of the system is the severed head, the still alive head of Congresswoman Diane Welch, smiling serenely. Like, she is an automated severed head, which is disturbing and upsetting, and other gerunds.
Yeah, it is, and but it's just a cool little connection to the greater story here. Like, she was kind of a I don't even know the word. She's very simplistic, and she was easy to manipulate. Yeah, she was kind of got walked over a lot. You know, she didn't really stand up for herself. She seemed very
pushover, as I think.
Yeah,
he's
a pushover, very docile. Yeah. But that's exactly how all of the mind controlled people are. So she makes a good, conscious processor for Hank's mind control mainframe.
Yeah, I sort of do hope we get a little bit of context here for how she went from being a very alive human being to being a Futurama head that runs a set of buildings and the inner machinations within. Hey, Adam, the Nobel laureate of the Fallout video game universe.
You're getting into stuff that I don't remember a lot of, but go ahead.
Are there examples from the games that you recall where humans or human body parts were used as either computers or as power sources? Or is this like a new thing?
Not, I don't remember specifically power sources, so I could be wrong on that one, but definitely human brains being used. There was he was like the main villain of the first Fallout game. And I can't remember his name.
So like the master guy?
The master. That's it. You got it. I think we mentioned it last season.
Yeah.
So yes. So the master was essentially a computer, like a human head, computer brain. Very similar to kind of Mr. House's eventual reveal here in this episode, too, where he's like a digital conscious. So, yeah, I mean, that does exist in this universe. Yeah.
Okay. Gross. Weird. Also, by the way, at the same time, again, as a novice of this universe, I really do like all of these world building points. They're all surprises to me. That, you know, I didn't know a human head could be a computer in Fallout Land.
Yeah, you got to remember that in this world, they had really advanced technology. It just was earlier in the overall life cycle of being in the 50s and 60s era. So kind of put that into your head. And but imagine immense technological power in that time frame. That's what this is supposed to be like.
All the while, you know, we got power armored soldiers in Alaska. Those are somehow the front lines. And Americans have invaded Canada. And something that would inform the next scene here, like I said, they were in Alaska and they were fighting Deathclaws, which, as we know, were happened because of the government.
It happened because of the government. Is government mutations. This is a big theme in the show and in the games, the forced evolutionary virus. And man, I'm excited to see. I think I know, but I'm excited to see how Thaddeus turns out because his arm falls off as a result of the forced evolutionary virus. So pretty cool. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see where that goes.
His goddamn arm is falling off.
Our pets' heads are falling off.
Yeah, speaking of Thaddeus, we now got the power trio, which is the ghoul, Maximus, and Thaddeus. They are put into a position where they are fighting Deathclaws. As you mentioned, you know, massive wasteland predators here. There is a part where they're walking in like slow motion and it's like so badass and they're about to fight Deathclaws. And that is when, as previously stated, Thaddeus's arm just sort of plops off. And he was going to be the sniper, but now he can't help at all.
He can't do that. Now he's just kind of there. He's fumbling over his severed arm and trying to hold a rifle at the same time. Yeah, it's I like Thaddeus's character. He's the comedic relief this show desperately does need, or else it's a little too intense in like a very wonky world. So I like that he's there.
And then we get a fight sequence. It is Maximus.
We get a fight sequence.
Power armor versus Deathclaws.
And it's very cool and is very akin to you fighting Deathclaws in power armor. So
how many times in fighting a Deathclaw have you died?
Oh, so like early on in the game, so many. So in Fallout 4, there is a way to face a Deathclaw very early in the game. And there's also a way for you to find power armor fairly early in the game. And if you don't have it, it's like insta-death.
You just get sliced in half straight up?
Yeah, I mean, it takes like three or four hits, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty chaotic and very aggressive, and they do run at you. So it's exactly how they portrayed in the show. So, I mean, I'm telling you, I'll repeat it every goddamn episode we do. This is such a great, such a faithful storytelling of this game world on TV, and I'm so happy about it.
Also around this time is, as you say as well, the ghoul sees the mouth on Thaddeus's shoulder. His reaction is one of like, because Thaddeus has been like, you and me, two ghouls in a pod, baby. Look at, and like, I'm sure you, like, how is your mouth, shoulder mouth? Is your shoulder mouth doing well? At which point the ghoul looks at him and just did a brilliant moment of acting by Walton Goggins. He looks at the mouth, looks up, and is, and perhaps without context, this would have meant less. But now that I know, based on a little bit of research, plus my friend Adam telling me that he is most likely not a ghoul and that he's going to become something else, it did read heavily to me when the ghoul looked at him, being like, I don't know.
Yeah, this don't look like a ghoul to me.
Elsewhere, Norm wakes up again. And then, well, they knock him out. He wakes up. They're going to try to kill him still. We get like 5 more seconds of this scene, the conclusion of which was he reaches out over the radio to no one, i.e. Lucy, who is headed down to the mainframe, so not talking here. So I do look forward to the 5 or 10 minutes, I assume, that will be taken to wrap up this Norm storyline. But I think if you stitched it all together, it would have been like 20 minutes total. And perhaps you could have just shown us all at once. I don't know. I don't know how much it's going to tie in to the other storylines. But if it does, that'd be neat.
I think it will to some degree. I mean, Buds, who is the vault he let out, I mean, they are going to have some sort of relationship with Steph. Like, they understand that she exists. They know each other. So, it's going to be interesting how they handle that. I agree with you, though. I think it absolutely should have just been tagged on the last part of episode 6 and gave more room in 7.
100%. Yeah. So after this, again, Maximus is having this fight with the Death Claws. His Batman arms with the sharp blades on them were pretty sharp, because he is just straight decapitating these fools. And this allows the ghoul some time to walk into the casino and walk into a room we are familiar with him being in, except for it was 200 years ago. And he walks into a ruined version of the old, like, penthouse lookout that Robert House had. And it was interesting. It was fun seeing him back in this room that we had previously seen him in, stand up on the top of the railing with Robert House being like, come down here, and be like, no, you come up here. Like that.
Yeah, I really love this dynamic of the flashbacks and then the current day. I think it hits a weird, cool feeling, and I don't know how to describe it. There's a word out there for it. I just am not educated enough to know what it's called. But it's such a cool dynamic. And I mean, I love history, so I absolutely love this happening to me in real life too, like being in an old house or an old monument, and like, wow, this has been here for 200 or 300 years. Like, what must have people have done? So like, to see this parallel is very cool.
He then walks down, the ghoul that is, and presses a button, and Robert House shows up, you know, after he also the wall opens, and Robert House shows up on the screen saying, you know, well, hello, old chum, which confirms that House has survived in some capacity. And I also read that this is perhaps leading towards a possible ending, or canonizing a possible ending for Fallout New Vegas. And I wanted to ask you, how common is it with the Fallout games that there are different endings based on the choices that you make?
Yeah.
Is that like a normal thing?
Yeah, that's like kind of a thing. Like, you can get a different ending. You could miss entire storylines if you don't do the missions associated with them. So, I mean, I think most people are playing the main storyline, but yeah, there are definitely different outcomes that you can get. I'm not sure about this one specifically. Like, if there's nothing that sticks out to me. Again, I played New Vegas when it first came out. I mean, it's been a very long time, so I don't remember a lot of it. I remember bits and pieces, but yeah, Robert House, You know, the digital face, you know, the house always wins. That's a quest line from the game. I do remember that, but yeah.
All the while, we are also getting flashbacks that recontextualize Coop's choices throughout. We see that he's debating whether or not to hand off the cold fusion technology to political leaders after talking with his wife and coming to the conclusion that she's not as bad, not as much of a monster as he thought she was. But eventually he gives it, the cold fusion that is, to Representative Welch and the president, hoping that they use it for peace, a decision that now appears deeply ironic in the light of present disasters. It seems as though they did not use it for peace, buddy.
Nah, he gave the cold fusion to Mr. Krabs, and that ended up being the Enclave. So the Enclave in Fallout 2 and 3 claimed to be the legal continuation of the U.S. government post bombs drop. So that's a whole storyline of Fallout 3. That's like they're the primary baddies. So it's cool to see them kind of rear in their head a little bit. I'm sure we'll get more of that in season 3.
Yeah, and I'm also looking forward to just seeing who the ghoul is, what his choices are in the finale, and how those choices are or were affected, if at all, by the time that he spent with Lucy. Perhaps making him a little bit softer, but at the same time, more empathetic. Or if he rejects that completely and pendulum swings the entire other way, and what will all that mean for the end of our season 2 of Fallout?
Yeah, I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm also a little bit, I don't want to say nervous, but, you know, I'm a little apprehensive of how it's going to go, because they could go a bunch of different ways with this, and I feel like we're either gonna get a really insanely annoying cliffhanger, like most cliffhangers are at the end of a season, or it is gonna resolve itself and start a new chapter that will have you guessing a bunch. So I don't know which I would prefer. I almost think I want a cliffhanger, because that will keep, I mean, not that it needs any help, but it will keep people interested in the show.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of just have a blank piece of paper after this. We don't know if they're just going to kind of stay in New Vegas vibes. We don't know if they're going to venture out into at least, infrastructures narratively of other games or not. We don't know if they're going to go out into the cold, dark wilderness and just a fully, a newly baked version of this story that there's not really based on the games at all. So like you said, I want to know, whether it be cliffhanger or not, the end of season 2, just so I can get an inkling as to where they're going and how that pertains to the games in season 3.
Yeah. I have a question, because I'm curious, from someone who doesn't know the games, or what's going on, based on what you've seen, season 1, season 2, what do you think could happen for season 3? Like, what are you expecting? What are you intrigued about?
I think we're going to get less and less vault-based storylines, but perhaps that's incorrect. I thought that for season 2 as well. And then I think we're going to just have a larger, steady understanding of the American government or the Enclave, like whatever the larger powers that be. I think there's going to be some power creep that occurs, where Lucy, the ghoul, and Maximus are thrown into a larger and more damning version of the world over time. But for that to happen, the big bad of the third season has to be a bigger bad than the one of the second season. And that would basically be Robert House and Hank. So, does Hank die at the end of season 2? We thought he would die at the end of season 1. Does Lucy and Maximus and the ghoul get together? If they do, are they going to stay in the West or go East? I would just assume that it's more of an ensemble show rather than a fragmented storyline in season three. But where that ensemble is going, what direction they're headed in, literally, is still unclear to me.
Interesting. Yeah, I hope they go out East. I hope we get the Commonwealth. I hope we get some of that storyline. There's also, like, I can't remember what it's called in the games, but there's also like a version of Washington, D.C. And that's the Enclave. That's Fallout 3. So I hope we do go out there. I think it makes sense for us to go to the East Coast. But yeah, I'm excited, man. This is so you mentioned, like, not. You think that there might not be as much vault stuff. I think it's going to be the opposite. I think we're going to see and hear more of what these vaults are, because one of the biggest parts of this world is that the vaults, every vault is different. Every vault is doing a different experiment, and people are people in certain vaults aren't aware of things that exist normally in what you or I would call life. Like, there, some people are withheld things. People are experimented on. We've seen that. You know, there are a ton of scenarios that they could create for each vault. I mean, we know of at least up to Vault 111. That's from the video games. They're in Vault 32, 33, right? So there's all these vaults in between we don't know anything about yet. So, I mean, we got a couple of them, but yeah, I'm excited to see more about that, because that was always really cool in the game, is finding a vault and then going in and exploring and finding out what they were doing in that vault.
I wonder if Norm will bring us to those stories in season three, if he'll ground us in California or the West and continue on with vault storylines. That would be pretty cool.
And then Fallout 76 was set in, I believe, Appalachia. So, like, even that is, you know, West Virginia heading to the East Coast. And Fallout 76, when it came out, it was atrocious. Terrible, terrible launch. I feel so bad for Bethesda for that, because they really kind of screwed it up. But it
you
is
feel
now
bad
so
for them.
I do, because, like, it's such a great franchise and they screwed it up. So I mean I feel bad for the players, really. But Fallout 76, it ended up being much better. Like, right now, Fallout 76 is incredibly stable. People love it. It's got great storylines. There's a whole, like, imagine what you know about Appalachia now, all the myths and things you know about now. Just add in the Fallout universe on top of that.
Blue Ridge Mountains, irradiated rivers.
That's, you know, beautiful. I mean? Yeah, of course. So Pennsylvania, Virginia, Ohio, New Jersey, you know, that's all Fallout 76. And that's from Vault 76. So
was Fallout 76's release as bad or worse than Cyberpunk's? Like, which one was worse?
Oh, geez. Cyberpunk
or Horizon. What's the space one that sucked?
Anthem, and it's already closing their servers.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, that was a huge flop. So Cyberpunk, in similar fashion, has made a resurgence. Is an incredibly good game now. They fixed a lot of the issues. But with Cyberpunk, Sony, at least on the PlayStation side, literally refunded if you purchased it digitally. Like, they were refunding the orders, even post-launch, not just pre-orders. Post-launch, you could get a refund because there were so many problems with it. So many bugs. Like, you couldn't even play some of it.
Did Bethesda do that?
Bethesda, I think there was something, at least on the, you know, Xbox and PlayStation stores, respectively, I believe, did offer some sort of, like, return period. But Fallout 76, I think, was accepted as a game better than Cyberpunk. But the problem with Fallout 76 is it requires you to be online. It is a online Fallout. There's hardly any NPCs at launch. I don't know if they patched that, but they didn't have NPCs in the game. So you couldn't talk to anyone unless you came up against another real player, which took the fun out of the Fallout universe, like talking to all these NPCs and learning about the world. That's kind of a big deal. So yeah, they flubbed that launch, and they have since fixed it, I've heard. So,
by the way, Washington, D.C. in the games, also known as the Capital Wasteland.
Capital Wasteland. That's it. Thank you.
No problem. Do you think we're going to see Super Mutants again in this season, or Ron Perlman? Is he going to show up again in any capacity?
I wonder if this finale episode, something happens where Ron Perlman's Super Mutant comes out of his hiding for some reason. I think that would be very cool. I hope we see Super Mutants again just in the show. They're very dominant in the Wasteland, at least in the one I'm playing right now, again, which is Fallout 4. Like, there's Super Mutant camps that you can invade. There's hundreds of them. So I hope so, man. They're a big part of the game.
And then I wonder if they're going to stay in New Vegas canon or not. I also don't know how long they're planning on doing this show. Like, can they just stay in New Vegas canon because they're planning on doing 6 to 8 seasons, or are they looking to do 4 to 5 seasons, have it be shorter, and want to expand out into a extended universe? They have so many options, honestly, too many options.
Yeah. I mean, New Vegas is, you know, the installment of the game. It took place all in the Mojave Desert, but all of the games happen in the same universe. Like, so I love that we're seeing crossovers of characters and mentions of other areas. Like, we heard about the Commonwealth already in this season. We haven't seen it yet. We haven't been there yet, but we know it exists, and we know that they're a superpower for the Brotherhood of Steel. So I think that we will get a melding of all of the game's content, but all of the stories so far, with save Robert House, has been all new. Like, everything's like the ghoul. There's a ghoul character, but this version does not exist in the games. Lucy doesn't exist in the games yet. Anyway, they'll probably add her as a DLC, but
yeah, I mean, I think she's meant to represent a player character.
Yeah, of course.
Just a bit tabula rasa, and then her character gets built upon. Speaking of the Brotherhood, what do you think the role of the Brotherhood will be going forward in this show?
Well, when you're playing the game, you have the ability to do quest lines that make you a part of the Brotherhood of Steel. You could be an ally. You could fight against them. If you take out your gun and start shooting at them, they'll shoot back at you, and now you can't do that quest line anymore. So I think that's up in the air, man. I think I would love to see them again, because they were a fairly big part of at least 3 and 4. Those were widely received as very popular Fallout games. So yeah, I sure hope we see them again. I sure hope they make a return. And I are they allies? Are they enemies? I think that remains to be seen.
And we brought up a little bit Fallout 76 before. If they do a larger tie-in for season 3 for Fallout 76, what should we expect, perhaps plot or just tonally, based on what Fallout 76 is as a game as opposed to New Vegas?
So I think I don't think that they're going to base many main stories off of the 76 content of the game, I suppose. I think you're going to maybe go through the area that it takes place in. It takes place in the year 2102. I can't remember which era we're in. I think we're 200 years past.
Correct.
The war, right? So Fallout 76, if there were any storylines, it would be flashbacks. So it's possible we get a flashback that includes the Fallout 76 era with the ghoul, because he's been around for 200 years, roaming the wasteland. So I could see that. But yeah, I mean, it's in 76, you as the player exit the vault on Reclamation Day. as part of a plan to recolonize the wasteland, and obviously things don't go well. So,
oh yeah, sure. Well, to be fair, these are all questions I'm asking because I'm excited not only for the third season, but for the finale episode of season three, which again, because of Amazon changing all their shit, is almost definitely out now. So,
yeah, it actually comes out at 9 p.m. So it comes out in another like 26 minutes. So.
Okay. Well, this will be good. We can get this, all of these episodes. To be fair, this applies to both Fallout and A Knight of the Seven Kingdom. And this is just a byproduct of being adult human beings with jobs and shit. But we're not the most timely of releasing these episodes, but the quality, Adam.
The quality.
Quality.
Well, you know
is
what?
Declining
though,
over time.
I don't know. James is back. It's probably going back up.
Jamie.
I think that I like that we don't release the episode until the new one is like just about to release, because I feel like if people haven't watched it, it is a spoiler if you choose to listen to us. I don't know why you would do that, but if you choose to listen to us.
What, listen to us?
Yeah.
Nah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is. This is the last two episodes, so I think we'll be fine.
Dude, Spotify sent me an email today that was showing me like the people, how many people listened and what the most downloaded episode was. And every time that email comes to me and it's not zero, I'm just like, who are these people? Who are you?
Well, I mean, we do have friends that listen to it.
Yeah, that's not to say I'm not grateful. It's just crazy, dude.
It is crazy. Well, if you like to listen to us and you would love to support our efforts to continue making podcasts about movies and television and other things, please follow us on our Patreon at patreon.com/HBOBOIZ. Yes, you can pay to listen to us if you choose. You get all the episodes early, ad-free. You get Patreon exclusives peppered in there. And we also read your name out at the end of each and every show. So we'd like to thank our current patrons. Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, 6-7, Watch the Pit Already, Adam, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Susan, Buffalo Pizzle, Seafritz, and It's Not Eggnog Season Anymore. And thank you, Brent Ginn and Butter Nichols, for being our $5 a month tier patron. We appreciate all of you who donate and give to us. That's very cool of you. You can also follow us on all of the social medias at the HBO Boys Pod or the HBO Boys Podcast on Threads, Instagram, and TikTok. Very active over on Threads. It's a cool space. A lot of movie and TV talk over there. So feel free to hit me up over there. But I'm excited for this finale. I'm excited to watch and catch up to Knight of the Seven Kingdoms for you, so I can jump in on that show for an episode.
Oh my god! Yeah, dude, how's it going? Great. It's really good, man. It's a completely different perspective. The source material is just kind of looser, but at the same time, you know, we're getting it. Like the Targaryens still exist, and all of them, most of them, are crazy people. So you know that's still within. But the guy who's playing Dunk is just doing a great job, and the kid who's playing Egg is doing a great. I look forward to you watching that show and getting your perspective on it. Sort of the polar opposite. It basically will be in my position as it pertains to Fallout. That's not true. I'm in this weird limbo space where I'm also sort of asking Jamie how the books went, and he was just like, I don't know, they're good, they're bad, they're short, and the episodes are short, and that's it. But oh, by the way, also, Fallout season one, all episodes are now on YouTube.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that weird? Isn't
that fun? That is weird. Yeah, I like that, though. That's fun.
Yeah. But anyway, join us next week when we're back and talking about the finale of Fallout. And then maybe, as the person who's our Patreon, and they made their names this, maybe Adam will watch The Pit. Probably not.
Yeah, I really do want to watch it. I keep seeing really great stuff about it. Oh, speaking about seeing stuff, I was scrolling on TikTok and I saw a video from Game of Thrones where Joffrey was talking about Dunk as a knight. And he's got like 4 pages of knight accolades. So he does a lot in this show, apparently.
Yeah. So that's a scene from Game of Thrones. This is, by the way, so indicative of this podcast, where no matter what show we're talking about, at some point we'll be like, and Game of Thrones. So there's this scene where Joffrey is looking through a book of knights, and he says, like, oh, Sir Duncan the Tall, he has 4 pages. He must have been a really great knight, you know, Sir Duncan the Tall. And Jamie at the time is having trouble with his, spoiler alert, son. And he's just like, yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. Totally. That's what we should be talking about right now. But yeah, there are these parts, like in the show Game of Thrones, they mention Dunk, and they mention Aeg every now and again. Master Aemon, or Maester Aemon, the older brother of Aeg, up at the Night's Watch with Jon Snow there in the show as well. So that stuff is really cool. The show tying into itself back and forth is pretty gnarly, especially with how poorly the end of season 2 of House of the Dragon went. So I'm just glad to be in a space where I'm excited about Game of Thrones again. And but to Fallout's credit, by the way, I've not felt that way at all about the show, especially in season 2. This is just such a strong outing, and it continuously infuriates me, because again, this is what Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy are doing now, and this was their choice. Their gigantic deal they signed with Amazon, that they side-eyed their old show Westworld, and they're like, I guess we ruin it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it got ruined, but I mean, I think the trade-off was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty good. Anyway, see you guys next week. Bye.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.